to move nearly all the patients out because of the cut tonight. You will stay on.
The dark shift?
Does the dark bother you?
A place people die in should never be allowed to get that dark.
All right.
I like that you're air guitaring your way into this silently in your booth. It's amazing.
Hey, man.
It's a harmonica. It's not an air guitar anyway.
I got the music in me.
I want to start again.
I am music and I write the songs. Good evening, Anthony.
Ooh. Good. It was a little cocktail lounge vibe for you as Matt was singing.
What do you got going on there?
I got a little, I got some iced brew here because I need to wake up for the show. I want to be vibrant. I want to be alive and awake for this. I'm happy we're on a roll again. We're back in the studio together. I want to be alert.
I have a bottled root beer, which calls to mind one of my favorite episodes of Happy Days. When I was a kid, the plot was that Richie was trying to be a writer or something, and Mr. Cunningham gives him the speech at the end of the bar, like, Richie, don't try to grow up too fast, you know, enjoy your life, don't try to be an adult. And Richie learns the lesson in not trying to be an adult, and he bellies up to the bar at the end. The bartender goes, what do you have? I'll have a beer. The bartender goes, draft, bottle. And Richie goes, root. For some reason I remember that.
Root.
This is Rated P for Paranormal. Welcome back to the show. You know what we do. We're entertainment pros that rate, review paranormal themed movies. Tonight, the movie is The Power, not to be confused with The Power Station supergroup.
Or The Tower of Power.
Right.
Yeah.
Great horn section.
There was a movie from the 60s called The Power, too. Sci-fi Ooh. Movie.
Okay. This is a modern horror paranormal film that we decided to delve into. First up, we've got so much to get to. The table is full, so let's just get to it. We've got mail, we've got voicemail, we've got your texts, we've got your messages. We triggered someone, Tony. We have to talk about that. On and on. And first up, we must make an announcement. Why aren't you listening to Skinwalker Ranch? This is now the third time we'll have teased it. But here's the deal. You guys are cool. You love us. We love you. We're all P4P family. We are dealing with a show that's in production, meaning The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch. My friend Jason, one of the showrunners, executive producers, our schedules, things are hectic. So we keep thinking we have it and then we don't. But they will be completely wrapped very soon and we're going to get them. So I think after Halloween, it's going to be, but it's coming. And apologies. It's coming. I won't tease it anymore until it's in the can. How about that?
I think that's a good idea. I think that we should keep our mouths shut about announcing anything ahead of time.
Just in general. I think we should keep our mouths shut
ever,
in general.
Ever again. Never announce anything. Just surprise people with whatever happens to be, whatever we're able to actually accomplish.
Yes. I got too into trying to make sure the audience knew what we were doing week to week. And I think there is a percentage of you that proactively watch the film we're going to talk about and anticipate us talking about it. But a lot of you also just turn it on and listen. If you haven't seen it, you're fine. So yeah. I got to relax a little bit.
I mean, I also will cop to the fact that, you know, on the podcast that I love, sometimes I'll just hold off on even downloading an episode until I've seen the movie that they're talking about. But that's not, you know, a terrible hardship. So I can wait. So if you need to wait, if we're holding you up on in your life pursuits, go live your life. Don't wait for P for Paranormal. Do what you need to do, but understand we're there for you.
You son of a bitch. If you don't download every single episode when it comes out, don't even bother listening.
Now, as long as you subscribe and you download consistently, if you miss a movie because you feel like you want to wait, I'm gonna be cool about it.
And quite frankly, given the last, like, I don't know, we're on a run here.
Yeah, you have no right to be laying down the law on listeners right now, man. We have not been fan servicing any fans remaining.
You tried to do a video call the other day. You tried to do a video.
It's true.
And it was such a disaster. I put it on our social media. And at one point, I just heard Tony's disembodied voice go, "Hey, are you trying to FaceTime me right now?" As if it was like, "Are you trying to assault me right now?"
Oh, God.
We don't know what's happening. But, oh, God. So we love you. So thank you for your patience. So we're just going to, we decided, let's do a couple episodes. Let's try one.
Yeah.
I'd like to get one more in for Halloween, like a Halloween special next week.
I don't think
week,
we should stop for any reason. We should record that episode when we get him and he has time to do it. So that's we get a good interview with him.
Yes.
I don't want him just being able to give us 15 minutes because a UFO just landed in the backyard and he's got to go run out and deal with it.
Exactly. So it's coming. He's committed to it. He's in. It's just we got to be patient with the schedule a little bit. And it'll be right after Halloween. All right, Tony. So let's get into the power. But first, we got to clear this table of everything we've got here.
You said we triggered somebody. Did we do?
Yes. Let's get right into that.
And now it's time to hear from you.
You're a godsend. A savior.
No, I'm just... the postman.
The P4P mailbag.
Okay.
Oh, the great Jerry Thornton, sports writer extraordinaire. He's got a massive following. Comedian, writer. He sent me a message. And he was listening to our episode about the documentary that we both hated. That you, I believe, called a giant marketing campaign. And that top three... I believe was top three movie jackets of all time.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I vaguely remember this. Yeah.
And I believe my top choices were James Spader's white jacket in Pretty in Pink. Top choice, I think, was Sly Stallone in Nighthawks, his trench coat that he choked out the bad guy with at the beginning. Well, Jerry Thornton says, I am triggered by your top three jackets because where is Maverick from Top Gun, and where the hell is Lloyd Dobler? How could you mention a trench coat of movie history and not mention Lloyd Dobler? That iconic trench.
Okay, well, I feel bad. I actually, he's got a big point there with Dobler. I'm gonna give him Dobler. That's an oversight because Dobler's trench coat, it's more important than Humphrey Bogart's trench coat from like The Big Sleep. It's important. So I'm going to give him that. And I'm simply not going to go for Maverick in the Top Gun or any of it. So no, it's just a military jacket. You don't get props for just wearing what your uniform is in my world.
I gotcha. Yeah. As you would say, Tom Cruise doesn't need our help.
Right.
Lloyd Dobler holding the boombox over his head. And I'm not even being remotely facetious. Is like maybe, no, not maybe. I think it's got to be like top 100 movie images in my mind, iconic. It's like, you know, that poster of The Exorcist when he's standing outside the door with his briefcase? Him holding up the boombox with that trench is just...
It's great.
Perfection.
It's great. Perfection. Modern classic. Great character. Good.
I'd like to apologize for triggering you, JT. We appreciate you listening. He's an avid listener. He's on the treadmill right now listening to us. Most likely shirtless.
Flying into a rage.
Yep. Ooh, speaking of Sly Stallone. Did you see the picture that dropped this week on social media?
I didn't, but he's going through some kind of a traumatic.
No, don't bring it up. I'm going through it with him. I'm basically going through it.
Don't bring it. You brought it up. I'm the bad guy now. Suddenly. All right. Set me up again.
I'm going through a divorce. By that, I mean Sly's divorce.
Okay.
It's a very painful time for me and my family.
Okay.
But now they're back together again, supposedly. But that's not what I'm talking about. There was a picture on social media this week of me, Sly Stallone, and Arnold Schwarzenegger. And we were carving pumpkins with huge Bowie knives. With huge, like they had those huge Rambo knives. And they were carving a pumpkin together. And a friend of mine said to me, how much would you pay to be there on that day with them carving pumpkins? And I said, I'm quite serious. It would alarm you and my family to know what I would pay to be in that room with them.
Or what you would do to do it, not even pay. Yeah. Can I ask a question about this photograph? You made it sound like both of them are carving the same pumpkin together. Is that what's happening?
No, okay. No, we wouldn't do that.
They each have their own pumpkin,
right? It's two pumpkins. We got one. He's got one. I got the other. And we're covered. You come in here. You see, we got one pumpkin. We got two.
I would like, I'm saving money for Max's college for the past like 3 years. I would give it all and just say, Max, you're going to state school. I had a chance to carve a pumpkin with Sly Stallone. And
right.
I wish you well.
And you're lucky, because I thought about you know, giving kidneys away from both of you.
I literally would.
So there was thanks to social media, you can enjoy it. Just, it's there. You have the picture. You can enjoy it without having to really pay or do anything.
I pretend I'm there in my head.
Of course you do.
Most times.
Let's move right. Yes.
When people are talking to me, just know there's like a cartoon bubble while you're talking, especially if you're talking about politics or anything. It's just it's just Sly Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger covering pumpkins.
Well, yeah, that about sums it up.
We also got mail from Superfan Kerrig, who had a lot of questions, as we did, about last week's episode, The Wretched, that film. He was confused. We were confused at certain plot points, disappointed with things, liked other things. He asked what we asked, when does the witch take over the new person, which I have an update on, as you know, Tony. I'll get to that in a second.
Any update would be just a theory. It's which is fine, but it's not necessarily mean it's actually in the movie.
Oh, it's for real.
Okay.
He makes a great point. The movie makes a big deal of these symbols on the doors. It's never addressed. They never explain what that symbol is. It just kind of means the witch, I guess. And what about the salt, as you had pointed out? So, and then he brings up an honorable mention for our top three road kills. The opening of The Changeling, while not a deer like in Wendigo, it does have the opening death by car. I don't remember that. Who what's the beginning of The Changeling, Tony?
George C. Scott loses his wife and kid in a car accident.
Oh my God.
Horrifying. Like that truck that wrecks. Yeah.
Ridiculous scene.
It's so scary. It's
so
awful.
Scary. I guess that, well, we meant animal roadkill. So.
Well, I mentioned Hereditary, so I kind of opened it up.
That's true.
Yeah. It's my fault.
That truck smashed their head like a pumpkin.
Okay, we got the Stallone out of the system, out of the way. Can't come back. Can't come back to Stallone.
I'm coming back to get you.
No. All right, yes. Now, I'm glad that you mentioned that somebody was triggered. I'm glad that it was half serious. I know it was a serious issue, but I get worried. I'm like, I'm glad Kerrig isn't taking us to task, because usually Kerrig calls in with something that's like, it's something we missed.
Hey guys, you know? Yeah.
And he's always right. So I'm like, I was bracing myself to hear some bad news about,
you know what?
What we messed up. Yeah.
Pending your approval, I'd like to do a quick meeting of Parliament here. P4P Parliament. P4 Parliament. I would like to upgrade Kerrig from superfan to associate producer.
And I have no problem with that. I think that makes absolute sense.
P4P family, welcome Kerrig. Once superfan, now associate producer. He's the only one who's ever made us a flow chart of our picks. He's unbelievable. So
he's looking out for us. He has our back, and that's always been appreciated.
I'll tell you someone who might also move up to associate producer, and that is film director, the one, the only, the very talented Peter Stray. And we heard from Peter Stray via voicemail. We ask you to leave us a voicemail. You can go to our site, anchor.fm/ratedparanormal. Hit just the simple button that says leave message, and you can leave us a voice message. And Peter Stray left us a great one.
Hello, Tony and Matty. Peter Stray here. I want to respond to Nope briefly and then get into The Wretched. Nope, I agree with both of you, as did another caller, but mostly with Matty. I loved it. I actually saw it 3 times at the cinema, not just 2. I thought it was brilliant. But I agree with Tony that there's some characters kind of, maybe a bit crudely drawn. The Wretched. Yeah, it was so bizarre. Like, what film am I watching? Some amazing moments. I think there was one point where you mentioned that, like, there was a different witch, like the girlfriend turned out to be a witch. And my understanding, it was the same witch. Because we see the body of the woman that she'd previously inhabited sort of with a gaping hole. So it was like she hopped out of that body because that body was getting kind of dry and then hopped into the girlfriend's body. The question is, when did she do this? Anyway, you guys are awesome. Very best wishes from P for Peter.
It's funny. I literally just talked to Peter this afternoon, and I hadn't talked to him in a few weeks. I owed him a call. We had a nice chat. Yeah, well, he's, you know, we have to figure out what the right correct title is here. He may be a field liaison, something like that. He's, you know, definitely a producer material, but maybe something more esoteric because he's, you know.
He's more of a contributor.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Producer, like he actually brings, you know, content. He's been a guest. Well, he's also very close to getting together what he needs to for his second film. He's almost, almost awesome. Done shooting something new. So yeah, more to come on that.
Yeah. Huh. I wonder if there's a part for a 6'3".
Nope.
Lanky host guy. Peter, by the way, has a new podcast himself called Old Habits, The Rise of Hans. I think it has to do, I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet. We'll tell you more about it, but I'm all in because I think it's about Hans Gruber from Die Hard. I think the whole podcast is about Hans Gruber.
I can neither confirm nor deny this, but I can confirm that I am a part of this.
Oh, show. Really? Oh, my gosh.
And it is highly, highly entertaining. All and right. I can't wait to get the go ahead to publicize it because it's really funny.
Well, we got some breaking news here, Tony, because in editing last week's The Wretched, if you listen carefully to the cold open, one of the lingering questions that both Kerrig and Peter Stray and others asked us was, okay, one of my major problems in the movie is when does the witch steal that boy, that little boy? And when I was editing the episode, listening to the cold open clip, I think it's very clear. Listen to this.
Are your parents home?
Can I help you?
Hey, sweetie. My son, he likes to play hide and seek. He's a handful.
Now, I don't know if you noticed that. But when she's at the door, that scene we both said we loved, she's looking down through the screen door at nobody. And she goes,
are your parents home?
And then the teen at the top of the stairs says, can I help you? And she looks up and goes,
hey, sweetie.
Oh, my God. She was talking to the little boy in that scene who the teen at the top cannot see anymore because he has no memory. So she must have taken him right then or right at that moment.
I think that's probably absolutely correct. Does knowing that make it any better, really?
Well, I think you raise a good point. We're working really hard to figure out something that's kind of just like a basic.
You know, that's all
doesn't
fine.
Really matter
to me. That kind of deep, you know, interest in the details pays off when the experience of watching it compels you to find out more. But I'm just I'm just like confused at the at that point. I don't
and if
need
some
to know
if a
that.
Discovery like that was somehow revelatory. Like, holy crap.
Yeah.
She took him then. So that means this theme and this theme and this theme.
It doesn't change anything. It's just like, that's when it happens. So.
It's a confusing minor detail. Okay. Yeah. But I was very proud of myself for coming up.
You should be. That was a good call.
Nick Krasinski messaged us and said, for Roadkill, you missed the dogs from Resident Evil. The movie wasn't great, but the dogs were cool to see after playing the first game. I don't play video games, so I didn't catch the reference, but
I don't either. And
did you see Resident Evil?
I think I saw one. I think they've made a few. I saw one of them. I think that's Mila Jovovich.
Yes.
I think, right?
Nailed it. That's exactly how I say the name. Yeah. Mila Jovovich.
Bill Jovovich. And yep. She's great. He's great. They're all great in that movie franchise. Mm-hmm. And I saw one of them. Don't remember dogs. I'm not a gamer myself, so I don't, you know, I feel a little sheepish about that because everybody who's cool I know is a gamer and I'm not.
Thank you, Nick. Also, I wanted to say that somebody pointed out, a fan named Robert pointed out that, hey, P4P, you're ahead of the curve with the movie Smile, the new paranormal horror film that I actually went and saw. I'll give you a quick micro review in a second. He said, you guys were way ahead of the curve because on February 25th, you did the movie The Eighth Night. What was The Eighth Night? That's a bad sign if I don't remember the name of them. Did we do a movie called The Eighth Night?
Yeah, I think we did.
What the hell was that?
Going back a ways.
Hold on. Now that's not a good sign for The Eighth Night. I don't even remember that movie. Could you Google that? My machine's being slow.
Can I just look up even Google something right
look
now?
Look up the movie Eighth Night. I have so many tabs up, bro.
I got you. Oh, it's the one with the Buddhist priest who kills everybody.
Oh, the Asian film.
Yeah.
I actually liked a lot, and we both liked a lot about that movie. Okay. Yes. Okay. So he says, Robert says, on February 25th, you guys did The Eighth Night, and your top three was Creepy Smiles. Hello, a year and a half later, the movie Smile about creepy smiles.
You know, we got our finger on the pulse. We know what horror fans and paranormal fans are into. Smiling. This year it was smiling. Who knows? The next year it was something else.
I went and saw Smile by myself, 2 weeks before Halloween. Great evening movie. Got my popcorn, poured my Reese's Pieces into there, had my giant Coke, going to see a hot new horror movie. And let's just say I didn't do a lot of smiling.
Okay. Well, we get many reviews, many opinions and reviews from you for the price of one. You don't like anything anymore.
What
But
have
we
you
don't know if
done?
you
What have
like
you
it.
done to me?
I don't know. Hanging out with me has its benefits. A little
The
le yes.
lead actor, I will say, is she's wonderful. She carries a lot. As you say, she's put into like almost tortured for 2 hours, hour and a half, because she's just constantly upset and crying and going through this hell. And she really cares. You know what it is? It's Kevin Bacon and Kira Sedgwick's daughter. Bacon, I forget her first name. Sosia Bacon, I think. She's awesome. There's a husband character she has. There's just a lot wrong with it. Put it this way, there are super pivotal, scary scenes that I actually was kind of was laughing out loud in the theater. Unintentional humor.
I
And
can't wait.
that's not a good
I
sign.
like the ad campaign. I like the poster. It's a kind of spooky, so
There are spooky
you know.
moments. It's not a zero, but it's
She kind of looks like sleepaway camp a little bit at that poster. I'm serious. Which is this has haunted my dreams.
There's nothing even remotely as disturbing as there was in the end of Sleepaway Camp in this movie. So, unless you're scared of CGI giants in small cabins, that was a huge spoiler alert. I'm sorry.
Wow.
Okay, let's move on. Thank you all for messaging us and reaching out to us. You can do that again, our socials, Rated Paranormal. Ooh, one last piece of news. We'll get to our movie. I made us a TikTok
Yeah, you
account.
did, didn't you?
Yep. So more to come on that. I'm going to be putting little TikTok videos out. Be looking for more horrible videos from us,
Yeah,
from
TikTok is your department, Maddie. I don't want to talk to a producer about TikTok. I really don't want to be involved. You're going to clearly put me in these horrible videos,
Yep. You're already in the first
without
one.
my permission and without my vetting it. And that's something I've now got to live with.
If you go to Rated Paranormal on Instagram or Facebook account, you'll see the first TikTok video. We released it this week. It's wonderful. Tony, you're front and center. I think next week we should do a paranormal TikTok movie where all the kids are on TikTok and there's a demon running among TikTok.
There's, you know, I'm sure someone's beaten you to that
Oh,
already.
it's already happening. You
You
know
know it.
that.
Yeah.
Well, how about the power? Let's get to the power, shall we, my friend?
Okay, come on.
I love working nights. You can get up to all sorts.
Bit of dark won't hurt you.
Who 1974. A young nurse is forced to work the night shift in a crumbling hospital as striking miners switch off the power across Britain. But inside the walls lurks a terrifying presence that threatens to consume her and everyone around her. Tony, what was your reason for picking the power?
My reason for picking it was I saw the trailer on Shudder, which is a service I have and I like, and it was on the list of they have interesting kind of designations for films, and this was like the scariest on Shudder, and it was in that list.
Yeah.
And it looked good. It looked well art directed. It looked well made, and it takes place in the 70s in England, which in London, which to me is a really fascinating time and place. So almost anything that would take place then and there, I'll watch it. And so it just kind of looked worthwhile.
Yeah, I think it was like East London in the city in a bad area. It's alluded to that it's a bad area. And then the history
meaning
is
London
all,
in the 70s.
Well, yeah, yeah. The nurse in the opening of the film, our star, she is getting interviewed basically as a new nurse from the kind of head nurse, who's a great actor in this movie. Both of them are great.
One of my favorite things in it is Devine Henry as the head nurse. I thought she was
awesome.
Fantastic.
And her arc from Nurse Ratched basically to the change she makes at the end with just a simple line. That's one of the good things about it. And I think there's a lot of good things about this movie. She's having this interview as the new nurse, and it sets up that she's from this area, that it's a depressed area. People are very poor in that eastern part of London, and that she's come back after going to nursing school to work to try to help the poor people in that town, which she is kind of given attitude for. Oh, how valiant of you to come here and help the poor people, you know, which I thought was all a great setup, set against the backdrop of, as I mentioned in that opening, that they're shutting the power across Britain. So you have a nurse forced to do an overnight in 1974 scary hospital when there's going to be no lights on. And the only people in the hospital are her, a couple other nurses, a very creepy male janitor who's lecherous and awful in every way, and the people being kept alive by generator on the ICU unit. And I'm going like, what a freaking great setup. I was so 1000% in the first act of this movie, from its looks to the plot, to our lead actors, who I thought was beautiful and super restrained, to that nurse character we just talked about. I'm just like, this is like session 9 level setup.
Where are you from?
Right here.
Back to serve your community.
Thank you for choosing me.
I require discipline. Stick to your rank, never question an order.
Yes, matron.
I won't keep you if you don't fit.
Yeah, it's great that you bring up session 9. I referenced this too in thinking about it, because it has a lot in common with that movie.
It does.
It has one, it misses one thing about session 9, which is pretty big, and I'll talk about that later, I think. But generally speaking, it's the kind of setup for horror that I really like, which I mean simple. The issues being very clear. I've got to spend the night in a horrible place, and
yes,
I really don't feel comfortable with that.
Yes.
And that there's something in this place with me that is bad. You know, now, maybe human, maybe supernatural, or both. That part of it, I love that setup.
And a subtext of a woman trying to make her way in 1970s, fill in your city, I guess, but in this case, London. And kind of the lecherousness of the doctors and that awful character I was talking about before, the janitor, and what women do to each other in the workplace. Like, there's all this subtext going on that was really awesome and gave it kind of a really exciting potential, I guess I would say. It doesn't, you know, I don't cook, but have you ever seen a dish? In your case, I know you do a little cooking, I think. And it's like, all the ingredients are working. Everything's working. It's clicking. Everything looks great. You go to take the first bite and you're like, this is going to be awesome. And then someone comes in and grabs your hand and goes, wait, I got to add all this frosting and stuff to it. Right?
Before you eat it, you got to dip it in that first and then eat that with the thing on that and sprinkle that on it. And then
watch this. It's going to shine. It's going to shine over here, and then it's going to levitate off your fork.
We cook it again in a little sous vide like tray at your table, and then we poach it. And then we're going to put flame on it just for a second, caramelize the surface, and then you eat it. Chopsticks. Got to eat it with chopsticks.
And I'm like, it was really cool the way you had it for a second there.
You've done too much to it. Yeah. Okay. Well, we really, you know, I think we're in lockstep on this. I kind of know the moment that stuff stopped working for me. I think I was ready to, you know, start calling people up and recommending this movie till about an hour in.
May I try to predict what it was
for
you? When our lead goes down into the basement and kneels down, and the ghost sucks her backwards.
No.
Is that it? Okay. All right. Okay.
And I know why you're saying that, because I've kind of complained about ghosts in movies that slap people around.
Well, and carry them and flip them up in the air. And
however, I got to say, I think in this case, I think they do that better in this movie than they've ever done it. I thought there was actually something kind of subtle about it, comparatively, and they sold it more than they usually do. The ghost stuff was really spooky. I liked that. I liked every time it appeared, and now it brushed up against people, and people didn't quite know if it was there or not.
Yep.
That stuff worked for me. No, it really was more, it's around when things started getting complicated plot-wise.
Okay.
It was after, so our star playing Val in this movie is the actress Rose Williams, who we both think is very good in the movie. She does a great job of playing afraid. She goes, she goes catatonic. Like she gets still instead of like really reacting, which is a smart move. And it reminded me like George C. Scott in The Changeling, how he did that.
We said the same thing. Like that's how people act when they get scared. Yeah, they freezes, get quiet. Yes.
Which I loved.
Loved it.
You know, I thought when she meets her old associate from the orphanage, like this kind of rival that she knew when she was in the orphanage, played by Emma Catherine Rigby, Babs, also terrific in the movie.
Amazing.
I liked that. I was down with that. I said, okay, there's history. There's going to be a little back thing that we're going to learn.
Yep.
Some kind of haunted past.
Yep.
And that does happen, I think, but a little like you're a little like that starts happening to the point where you're like, enough haunted past. Let's just stick to the hospital.
Let's get to it.
At any rate, the scene was right after that, another character's introduced, Neville, played by this guy, Theo Barklin-Biggs. I think he was great in the movie.
Yes.
But they try to establish that this character who's like a creepy janitor or young janitor is preying on these nurses or helping the doctors prey on them somehow.
Right.
And he's kind of, it's implied that he's sexually abusive of them. And they, you know, he turns on the radio and he's acting inappropriate with Babs, you know, and then
they kind of
go off into another room and they have this dance. And it's at that moment that they start playing with like slow motion and it gets kind of like theoretical and it gets a little bit weird. And I know they're reaching for something creepy and it's not creepy at all. It's like literally not happening. And I was like, they've lost me. Because they're really trying to establish this blue velvet kind of mood where things are getting, you know, particularly out of hand and unnerving for this woman. And it was like a badly rehearsed scene in a play. It just didn't seem to be working. And at that combined with the plot getting increasingly complicated, the backstory, that's the part where I just started losing faith in it. And
yes. It wasn't that specific thing for me, but it was around that time because I took him as a nice little additive obstacle for her and probably pretty damn accurate for 1974. If a woman was alone in the hospital and there was one janitor in 1974, chances are he may, you know, so that didn't bother me as much.
I'm not saying that I didn't believe it, that it was happening. I thought it was actually like a very kind of creepy and interesting nod to like creating a young Jimmy Savile type person who
right.
was an actual horrible human being.
Yes.
That I just felt the director didn't really capture the mood of what they were promising to capture for me.
They didn't execute.
Didn't execute it. The actors felt uncomfortable to me. It just started not working there. And that was the first time I noticed a scene that just didn't feel like it was selling what it was it was advertised.
Yeah. It's right around that time that we get introduced to the little girl character, and then it starts to slowly get really muddy.
That was the part so I lost the track on that scene, and then when they introduced Newt from Aliens, I lost all interest in the movie.
Yes.
I didn't care anymore.
Yes.
Nothing against that young actress. She's really fine and everybody's great, whatever. It's the character shouldn't have been in the movie for me. I didn't want that.
Yes. Yeah, it's one of those situations where they had it and didn't trust it, I feel like. And then the elements that were working, I think, with the subtlety of the ghost, although some of it arguably subtly, start to get bigger and bigger. And then they start to do things that are ubiquitous in every horror movie now. The possession type of body movements and actual levitation at some points. And they want all of it.
They want it to be a David Fincher movie. They want it to be Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. They want it to be Seven. They want it to be, you know, all kinds. They want it to be Hereditary. They want it to be
Hereditary, you know, the body
Emily
movements.
Rose. They want it to be everything.
There's literally an exact Hereditary scene and there's an exact Emily Rose scene.
Yeah.
Like shot for shot almost.
Yeah.
And so you start to go, boy, you had something different. You had something period. You had a disembodied spirit of some kind, really creepy in this dark. The movie's called Power. The Power is out. That's an awesome conceit. And then you've got the added threat of a lecherous, possibly abusive janitor who screamed at her as she walked away from him down the hall, which to my mind, it might've been the scariest part of the whole movie. His scream, you know, after her was chilling to me. And then you started to layer upon that beautiful base all this other stuff that didn't need to be there.
You had me at 1974 Blackout Hospital.
I don't
need anything else.
Thank you.
And if you can create a mood and do that, tell that story, I'm just completely enthralled.
I will watch her for 2 hours and all you need is a person that we don't know who it is standing behind her in the hall. And I'll barely be able to watch it. I'll have the covers up over my eyes.
Yeah.
The second she starts floating. Well, I want to talk about Session 9. You brought that up earlier. Mm-hmm. Session 9 is a movie that does pay off on that promise and just keeps ratcheting up the dread. And the dread and the dread and the character development and the stillness of it. Mm-hmm. And this movie had that for a minute and then let it go.
It did. It let it go in a way that, you know, it made me sad because there's so much of it that I genuinely kind of thought was like, I kept on being like, oh, good, you sold that. Like, I know they don't have a huge budget here. They're trying to make, you know, a period piece work in an old hospital, which, you know, is a lot of sets and stuff. They couldn't, you know, they didn't have what they had when they made Session 9. And a big part of movies like this, that if you're going to make a movie about, you know, that haunted hospital movie, that character is the hospital. Like, and that's something that they weren't really able to achieve on their budget. They tried, they had some great set pieces, but Session 9 was shot on location in a decayed old hospital.
I mean,
it's like one
hospital.
Of the most terrifying places for real that you'll ever be. And the actors didn't have to pretend anything. They were just in this really probably haunted place, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you could say, well, The Shining was all a set, but then I'd be like, well, come on, whatever. The Shining's designed by the greatest set designers in the world. So it's, it's even better. But this was just, you know, it lacked personality except for two rooms. And like, I want to give props to the production designer. Because the child's room, like the main kid's room, is pretty scary. That's an awfully creepy room, like where all the main playroom or whatever.
Yes,
the drawings on the wall.
The drawings are terrifying.
I really like that. And the room where the generator is, I guess that's red.
Great.
Is beautiful. It's a great scene. Device. And the only problem I had with that was that it doesn't. Okay, here's what I think they kind of messed up. Because they wanted to do all this incredibly complicated backstory, this, like, you know, Del Toro level, you know, haunted past thing with complex, like, world building of, like, you know, the ghosts that had died and then I want this or that or the other thing and are they controlling this? There's, what's the evil force in this movie? They had one job and that was to make me feel like I was working in that hospital that night.
Right.
And it was just too general. Like they put her to work and I feel like I'm there for a week. It's supposed to be a night, right? But it's like, I'm there. I don't know how long I'm there. It feels like she's been there for a while. And she doesn't have any specific jobs and they don't go like, avoid this level. They don't say like, here, this patient is like bad news, so don't go in a room this or that. They use none of these things that could have been like powerful anchors to her not going into a specific room, or, you know, don't, in instead of creating immediate dangers for her, they kept on going farther back into the past, into this Byzantine thing that I was like, I can't even keep track of it now.
Right.
So they lost this this beautiful simplicity. Well, which said. You know, they kept showing the map of the grounds, right? The overhead view, like from The Shining.
Well, I was supposed to say very Shining.
Right. And that and you're saying the okay, hospital, yes. All the different wings that were connected. Yep. And what they could have done with that, like different wings, and you're in certain places and you know you need to avoid certain others, and they didn't do any of that. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, well, the main story that you're telling happened off camera. It happened 20 years ago.
Right.
So why don't you make that movie?
Well said. The other production design element that came to mind when you mentioned the Red Room that I thought was really kind of slick and neat was the ICU unit. The cables from that generator look like that was snakes. So
cool. That was a really beautiful image.
They were just gross in the way they laid them. I knew that was intense. I go, that's really cool looking. It looked
definitely like that. You know, there were some beautiful design elements. I got to give props to the cinematography, because also, for a movie that takes place really in the dark, a lot of it, and what's supposed to be pitch dark, the movie's not too dark. You know, it really, like, I see a lot of films lately that I think, especially like made for Netflix stuff,
For
streaming, that's so dark. I'm like, there are whole sections where I can't even really see anything at all.
Can I just say, again, micro review, I watched the new Hellraiser. We mentioned it last week. I finished it. I could successfully see about 40% of that movie.
Right. Like, and it's at night. You're at night. Like, there's no other lights on, and I can't see the TV.
No, I wanted to see those creatures because they're so gross and ingenious.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't see them well enough.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of stuff lately that I've just been like, I can't see it.
I'm not fighting you.
It's like
movie.
A radio show.
Yeah,
it's like
don't
literally
let me
like
fight you.
A radio show without anybody explaining what's happening. You just hear fighting.
Yes.
Shuffle.
Yes.
Anyway.
But you're right. Yeah. They illuminated enough not so that it was annoying.
Yeah, it felt a little bit like, you know, it reminded me of like David Lynch movies like Lost Highway, which are right on the edge of you can't see it, but there's just enough in the blacks.
Right.
You know, the dark colors are coming through just enough in those shadows so that they're visible just enough.
That being said, however, and I agree with you, it is a movie where the entire thing is the darkness, supposedly the power. That's the big setup. And the nurse even says to the young nurse, like, it's going to be dark. Like, it's going to be dark. And there's not one scene where the dark plays a huge role in scaring the shit out of us. Like, couldn't I just get one? Because, you know, movies like The Sixth Sense did it. And that movie had nothing to do with the dark, but there's like two scenes in that movie where the dark ends up being the payoff to huge, terrifying moments. And there's a million other movies that use the dark more effectively. Like the movie that's whole set up about being for the dark, there's not even one scare based on the dark.
That's a really good point. That's in keeping with what I feel about the promise of this beautifully simple movie. And that concept would have been great in the in the more stripped down John Carpenter version of this, where it's just that bad night in a hospital. Shit. And admittedly, I think the movie is trying to, you know, really maybe a little too intensely trying to make a point about how women have suffered due to the patriarchy and to systems that are working in hospitals, particularly in the past in the 70s. And now they're uncovering this stuff. All of it valid, obviously.
Yeah,
all of it,
of course.
All of it important. But as I've said before, like I feel like, you know, they don't need to push so hard to explain all of that. It ends up feeling a little over-explained because of that part of the movie, and ends up tipping these kinds of movies end up feeling less like horror to me and more like thrillers with endings that are supposed to make us feel empowered. I don't want to give a lot away, that there are a lot of surprises in this movie, legitimately, and some things that happen that I didn't expect, but it starts taking on a tone of a little bit of I just was ahead of it. I was like, oh, okay, I know there's bad guy, their men are bad, and all right, I'll accept, totally accept that. But they could have made all of those points, I think, just by showing how this woman had to go through that night that without night. Any of the other right. stuff.
Show us hints of it and not turn it in. It's a revenge movie, really, more than a horror movie in the end.
Yeah.
It becomes a ghost revenge movie. And so, right. which has been done before and sometimes really effectively.
I mean, like Del Toro, like, you know, Guillermo del Toro, if you've seen his stuff, this is the vein of horror that we're in. It's like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
An old curse and you know, the wronged party is now trying to get revenge. But there's specifically the way this movie literally ends, like the last imagery to me is where I actually was like, not a horror movie. It just doesn't classify for me now.
Exactly.
Literally doesn't classify as a horror movie.
That's right. It's an empowerment.
It's an empowerment movie.
Yep.
Wrong vibe for me to end a horror movie on. Just like
agreed. That said, and nothing to do with what you're just talking about. I'm talking 100% visually. 100% visually, maybe my favorite shot of the year. And I don't know if it was intended to be as creepy as it was. Our three leads, I think I can say, because I won't say why or how, but three of our leads run down a hall together in shadow. And there's a way that they run with their hair going and side to side, almost maniacally running. It just chilled me. I go, that is the coolest image. You know what I'm talking about? When they join hands and run down the hallway, but then they're all in blackness.
It's like the last third of the movie. There's a sequence, right? The last
very last shot of the film.
Oh, it's the last shot of the film.
Very last shot of the film. The three of our leads join hands.
Oh, yeah.
And run down the hall right at camera. And they run into the darkness. Okay. We never see one of them. One of them's always in shadow.
Yeah.
And they run, and the way, especially that one shadow one runs, she runs like this and her hair's going all, and I'm just like, oh, that was so chilling. I'm like, could we add a few more of those shots? You know what I mean? That's all we needed. That's all we needed. We didn't need anyone levitating.
I checked out at that point.
Beautiful shot. I mean, it's just a chilling shot. I just wish there was a lot more of that. There's another hall scene. I'll give you one more that I loved, and the biggest chill in it, besides when the janitor yells at her. There's another hall scene where our lead is being pursued quite clearly by the ghost. It's kind of the first time we really kind of clearly see it. And she's trying to walk and this thing's coming down the hall at her. And it was very chilling. That was a really good shot.
There's a sequence that gets like, that's kind of a nod to Giallo, like Italian horror movies, and she's running past, like the Red Room is part of this. She's running down a hallway, she's being chased, and the score really kicks in, and it's this kind of like really goblin-esque, you know, like an Argento score. This like really breathy, weird, like people going,
yes.
And there are really these good moments that you know, they have these little flourishes that are really cool in the movie.
Yeah.
And you know, like it had already gone into that zone where I was like, okay, I'm really just trying to figure out the murder mystery of this and what's going on. And even though that was happening, I still was impressed by some of the effects work they were able to do.
Yep.
Not my favorite approach to ghosts, but if you're going to do it, they did it really well. You know, I mean, yep. I believe woman's contortions. I believed that she was being messed with by this, by this spirit. I didn't really, you know, the whole idea of her getting possessed this way was, I didn't know.
That's the problem. That's the problem. So we didn't need that. Didn't need any of that.
But accepting that.
Sure, you did it well. They
handled it well.
But I was out at that point. So, by the way, I should mention our top three in just seconds that we're getting to. Fitting, top three nurses in film history. This movie is chock full of nurses. Tony, do you have a favorite moment, favorite line, and then conversely, least favorite moment? I think you said your least favorite moment, or at least the moment that took you out of it earlier.
Yeah, that was the scene that really took me out of it. Mm-hmm. I didn't have, there wasn't any like lines or dialogue that particularly like, that spoke to Got me it. Much, but
right.
I guess favorite scene would just have to include the head nurse. I mean, I think that the induction scene with her getting her marching orders from the head nurse is like probably the most intense. That's the most chilling scene. I mean, it's just two people talking, but it's really good.
Mm-hmm. I think, my favorite shot is that hallway shot of the three of them running, last shot of the film. But my favorite scene, I think, is that same nurse, opposite end of the coin, the flip side of that coin. And again, I won't spoil it, but that same nurse who's so scary makes a change.
She has a beautiful close up that where she has, not even without any dialogue, she actually, something happens where she makes a transformation. It's really
cool. And just kind of delivers one simple little line to that. And it's just like, and it's just exquisite piece of acting. And
I will say it did get, here's also where it kind of fell apart a little bit. We're introduced to two other nurses who are always together, who are a little bit like the comedy relief a little bit, a little bit. And it started feeling like a Harry Potter dinner theater thing. And I thought we were just treading water at that point.
Yes. Yes. Some of the actions in that scene were highly unbelievable, borderline slapstick.
Right. And then you're not in you're in a hospital, get these wounds treated. There's gotta be an emergency room somewhere. Like, are we not?
Yeah, it's 1974. We know things are rough, but it's not 1874.
Right, exactly.
Like, yeah, there's things we can
John
do.
Merrick isn't like in the other room right now.
There's things we can do. All right. So, Tony, we got to get to that top three list. Mm-hmm. I think we've done all we can do for this poor young nurse trapped in the dark. At the end of the day, a lot to like about this movie, and we've detailed some things that disappointed us. Is it enough for you to rate it P for Paranormal and recommend it, put it on her shelf?
Nope, it's a pass for me with, I will see this person's next movie. I will definitely watch for these actors and other things. If you like this kind of thing, you're probably going to check it out anyway, and it pleases enough in that first half, but I can't put it on the shelf, man. Agreed. Yeah.
Reluctant pass for me. I'm not going to give it a P for Paranormal. I would give it a, husband-wife Halloween week, watch it streaming with a glass of wine.
It's worth watching.
This is not
doesn't mean it's on the shelf just because it's worth watching.
Exactly. This is not a bad movie, quote unquote. Like, there's so much artistry here. There's so many good things.
They really cared about it.
Yes, yes, yes. It just didn't deliver, as we've detailed already.
When I looked, there was no one there.
Are you just making this up?
No, I'm not making it up.
A nurse must give of herself entirely. Sacrifice. How much are you willing to give?
So there you have it. So, Tony, we've talked about the nurses in this movie, but how about the all-time movie and TV pop culture nurses?
Why don't you go on ahead?
Okay. She wasn't creepy, but she's in a creepy movie. My number three is, and I know I'm probably stealing one from you because it's one of your all-time favorite movies, and that's Nurse Alex Price from An American Werewolf in London.
Jenny Agutter is like the greatest nurse ever.
Right.
She's not scary, so that's not, she wasn't on my list, but that's a great call because she's great. Great.
I love her. I mean, you can't name nurses without her.
That's your number three?
That's my number three.
Okay. Good choice. I'm going with B.B. Anderson in 1966's Persona, where she plays a nurse named Alma, who goes to a small island with an actress who's had a nervous breakdown, played by Liv Ullmann.
Ooh.
And on this weird island all by themselves out there, kind of rehabilitating, they go through this really weird psychodrama where their personalities kind of mesh, and it's a strange movie, kind of creepy. And so B.B. Anderson's my number three.
Never
Persona.
Saw it?
It's an Ingmar Bergman movie.
Oh, okay.
So you maybe saw it in film, like film class or something, and they may have shown part of it.
I've never seen that movie of his. That is definitely a blind spot for me. My number two, again, probably stealing one from you. Although she's a former nurse, it's Annie Wilkes in Misery.
Great call.
I mean, you talk about creepy nurses.
Great, great call.
And maybe the scariest nurse scene in movie history when she bashes his ankles in.
I forgot she was a nurse. I actually forgot she was a nurse. And you're just saying this now. I'm like, of course she was a nurse.
Yeah.
And that's,
her whole, like, I'm going to care for you thing. Mm-hmm. Terrifying. So I had one creepy nurse on there, buddy.
You do, though. You're doing great.
Okay.
I love how you're doing. Everybody over here on the show loves how this is going, Maddie. They like you a lot.
My nurses aren't scaring me, but now you're scaring me.
Don't sweat this at all. Don't treat this like an audition.
I know. James Caan felt in that bed.
My number two
yes.
is is the 2019 movie Saint Maud, which is a really movie I really like, and it stars Morfydd Clark as Maud, who is a nurse, a home caregiver, who may not be somebody that would be your first choice to administer home care to.
Oh my God, I saw this movie. I knew when you said the title, I'm like, I've seen this. This movie is creepy. I forgot all about it.
Jennifer Ely plays somebody who is getting cancer treatments, and she's got this live-in nurse. You know, I'm sure there are nods to Persona in it. I haven't seen it in a bit.
Holy crap.
But anyway, Saint Maud, really good movie.
When she levitates over the...
Morfydd Clark is really good in this movie. Great. It's very scary.
Thank you for that. I completely forgot. I saw that. That might have been a Tony recommendation to me. I forgot all about
it.
Peter
Stray may have recommended it to you, because he recommended it to me.
Yes. Okay. I think we actually put that on our list at one point, and it should be on there. And that was your number two. So my number one. Now, I think this is the GOAT nurse of all time in film history. And at first glance, you're going to think, this isn't creepy, but you could make the argument that this is also the creepiest nurse of all time. I'm going to say that Gaylord Faulkner from Meet the Parents is my number one nurse of all time in movie history, played by Ben Stiller, male nurse, Gaylord Faulkner.
Okay. That's your number one.
Yep. I can't think of a nurse I would want to watch more in film.
Should we just say, are we going to have the temerity to just not say this? This has got to be the Nurse Ratched Memorial Nurse
List,
right?
I was going to lead with that. Yes, it's okay. Nurse Ratched. This award is named after Nurse Ratched. There's no one better.
I'm going to forget you just said what you just said, and I'm going to ask you to come up with another one while I tell you my runner-up, before I tell you my first choice. My runner-up is not really a nurse. I looked it up, and it turns out I think she's actually a doctor.
Okay.
But at first you meet her and you think she's a nurse, but Madge Ryan plays a nurse in The Clockwork Orange.
Oh.
Where he wakes up in the facility and she's like, you know, she's feeding him and kind of administering to him. She's terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
And like kind of a science fiction dystopian, you know, Uber controller nurse who he's got.
I love it.
But she's really a doctor. She's credited as... being Dr. Branham in the movie.
That's nitpicky.
So I'm going to go with my real number one, which I really think is the GOAT for talking nurses. Now, it's not a movie, but The Twilight Zone works for just as well. And I'm going for Jennifer Howard in Eye of the Beholder from 1960.
The faces.
The nurses that are doing the reconstructive surgery on the woman.
Yep.
And the doctors and nurses are really scary when they take their masks off. That's
I love that whole episode. It's like just genius, way ahead of its time writing and
good stuff.
Good. They peel the bandages off. That's awesome. Great call, Tony. All right. Well, I had an honorable mention. No reason she didn't make my list is because I did a Kill Bill last week in our top three. I didn't want to do two Kill Bills.
I thought of L Driver too.
Yeah, the guy has a scary scene.
It's great. But she's really not really a nurse, you know?
Yeah. And just her being defenseless in the hospital like that.
It's great.
One thing that came to mind too was that horrifying scene in Exorcist 3, but that was actually a nun that crosses the...
Right.
Right.
Nun.
That's a nun that crosses
And there's
the
great
hallway,
stuff in The Omen, but they're really nannies and kind of like day nurses. Right. They're not really nurses.
Well, if we forgot a nurse, let us know. You can go to... our socials and let us know what nurse we forgot. You guys are great about the top threes. And as I evidenced earlier in the show, correcting us on things that we missed. And if we triggered you by leaving out a nurse, please let us know.
What I don't want to do is trigger anybody by not leaving some recommendations. If people like this flavor of movie, like London 70s, creepy, raining vibe. There's a series of movies called Red Riding. There are three films about a true crime case that hit England in the 70s through the, I guess, early 90s.
Ooh.
And the first film takes place in 1974. It stars Andrew Garfield, Sean Bean, and Rebecca Hall. And it's really, really chilling and great and captures that, London Calling, era vibe. And it's super great.
Can we add that as a feature on the show moving forward, a Tony Rec based on what we're talking about?
Sure. That's a good idea. Okay.
Let's do that. A Tony recommendation. I'll make some imaging for it. A Tony rec. And most shows you rec. So it's perfect.
I just rec it.
I'm starting to get into Andrew Garfield. I just watched him in, he was great in that Mel Gibson movie about the conscientious objector during the war. He plays a true story of a guy who was a pacifist and he had to go to war basically. And he refused to carry a gun. He's great in that. He's great in the series I just watched in the Valley of God. I forget.
Yeah. Name. That's his series. I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
About the Amish
murders.
He's phenomenal in that. So he's really grown on
me. Mormon murders?
What did I say? Amish. It's Mormon. It's
right. The Amish murders are too terrifying to put on camera.
Amish mafia, yo. Thank you, Tony. This is wonderful. And if you think I picked Gaylord Fokker just to troll you in this list, you're absolutely correct.
I know you did. I know what's up. I know what's going on.
Next episode is our little bonus Halloween episode just in time for Halloween weekend. I think Halloween's on a Monday, so we'll try and sneak it in right before Halloween. What should we do for Halloween this year, Tony?
Why don't we do Meet the Fockers, Maddie?
Let's go classic. Let's go 80s. Nostalgia for both of us, children of the 70s and 80s. How about let's keep it fun with a child killer? Freddy Krueger.
I see where you're going. Great. Okay. Let's do Nightmare on Elm Street.
Let's do the first Nightmare on Elm Street. I think I haven't watched that movie in years.
It's been a few years since I've seen it too, so that's perfect.
Bonus, I do an impression of Freddy Krueger that my friends all say sounds like Jimmy Durante. Freddy Durante.
Not a bonus.
Freddy's coming to get you, Tony. Ha-cha-cha-cha-cha.
I have to teach you the word bonus and what it means, because that is not a bonus.
Gaylord Fokker.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of Rated P for Paranormal. Please rate, review, and share. It really does make a difference. For more information, to participate, and even donate, go to our main page, anchor.fm/ratedparanormal. On social media, we're at Rated Paranormal. All music is by Andrew Galdens Jr. You can find him on Instagram at Kid Riga, or go to therocketscience.bandcamp.com. This podcast was created, written, produced, and edited by Maddie Blake and Anthony Arkin.
I'm starting to get into Andrew Garfield.
Can't come back to Stallone.
I'm coming back to get you.
No.
Carving pumpkin.